Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. That sounded a bit ominous or something, didn't it? Hope you're well. But I do genuinely hope you're well. I meant that because, you know, there's still a lot going on out there. Football has given us a bit of an escape. Football has taken some of the focus off of what's happening, but we've all got to be safe and sensible and cautious. And, you know, I hope everybody out there is safe and healthy and well and doing okay, all things considered. This is the first Arscast regular that we have had for a little while, or at least it feels that way because of how frequently the games have been happening. We've been having a lot of extra Arscast extras or Arscasts extra. I'm not sure what the official plural is. Maybe we'll have to get on to, what's the Johnson's English Dictionary? Not Johnson's. The Oxford English Dictionary. Who the fuck is Johnson? Is there a Johnson's Dictionary? I'm not sure. I'll have to Google this. Johnson's Dictionary. No, there's Johnson's Baby Powder. A Dictionary of the English Language by Samuel Johnson. So it did come from somewhere. Somewhere deep within my memory banks, which are, I have to say, at this moment in time, absolutely and utterly fucked. Anyway, look, the point is, it's an OG Arscast. Friday, we're all here, we're preparing for what is a big, big game on Sunday, a North London derby. And what an important one it is. I mean, this is a game which always gives you a kind of visceral feeling. I'm not sure you can say they're always the most exciting games. Sometimes they feel a bit torturous to sit through because you've got that feeling in your stomach how you just simply do not want to lose this particular fixture. Sometimes they're exciting. Sometimes they make you want to throw up. And you really, really want to take all 3 points, but at the very least, you want to make sure that you don't lose. And I think that is very, very true of this game coming up on Sunday. 3 points would be amazing. 1 point, it's a derby. These things happen. But this is the first derby in which Mikel Arteta has been Arsenal manager, and it is, of course, the first derby in which Jose Mourinho has been the manager of Tottenham. It's like a coming together of two really terrible things. It's like a duet between Maroon 5 and Phil Collins. It's the football equivalent of taking a big gulp of orange juice just after brushing your teeth. It's like having your entire life narrated 24 hours a day by Fletch and Steve McManaman. Which is to say, it's a thing of unspeakable, ghastly, terrible evil. We are the good guys. They are the black chasm at the center of the universe, and we must overcome. So this is a very, very, very big, important game on Sunday. To think there were people that wanted Jose Mourinho to be manager of Arsenal. What is wrong with you? For shame, I say, for shame. I know we were all in a dark place at the end of the Emery era, but come on. Come on. Anyway, it didn't happen, which is good for us. And hopefully on Sunday we can continue the recent run of pretty good form that we've been on. You know, we had a midweek result, which wasn't ideal, but in the circumstances, You know, given that we were down to 10 men, you know, it's all a bit fucked up there. But before that, four straight wins, three of them away from home, which is an issue that we've had. So it's nice to see that being addressed. And there are some obvious improvements and things to be encouraged about by the work that Mikel Arteta is doing. So to talk to me about that and to talk to me about lots more besides, I'm delighted to welcome to the Arsecast our good friend Amy Lawrence. Hi, Amy.
Hey, Andrew. How's it going?
It's going okay. How's it all going with you?
It's going all right, you know. Another day. You move on with life and, you know, football is kind of helping us along.
Yes.
Nothing to complain about.
All right. That's good. I want to start by asking you just your general thoughts on how the last few weeks have gone for Arsenal. Obviously, the early part of football returning didn't go particularly well. The Man City game maybe wasn't one that we were expecting to win, but, you know, on the night some other things went wrong with injuries and red cards and what have you. And then there was the Brighton game, and that was not in the plan whatsoever. But since then, the response has been very encouraging. How have you viewed what's happened and the reaction Mikel Arteta has got from his players?
That's a really generous way of putting it, how you described the Brighton game.
Yes.
Not in the plan. Yeah. Just write that one off as not in the plan. It's funny because, like most football obsessives, you know, in that approach, if you like, to restart, it's a bit like, I guess, that moment when you're about to go on holiday or something and you're full of anticipation, or you're maybe about to get on the plane and you haven't kind of sat down and buckled up yet.
Mm.
Like, spent a lot of time looking at, you know, when the fixtures came out, took one look at those four away games to start with and thought, oh, you know, this is interesting. And that Brighton one just straight away to me looked like the vital one, because I was fully prepared to give Man City the first game and think, and you know, that's a pure bonus territory match. You just want to try and compete and look like the team's looking okay. But I don't know about you, but I wasn't really expecting points from that.
No.
So I thought, okay, Brighton is where you really restart Arsenal. So go and get something there, and then gives you the chance to take on, you know, another kind of this sort of away games that unfortunately Arsenal have become accustomed to it not necessarily going that well. So when the Brighton game went as cataclysmically as it did, including that extra injury, which felt really damaging, and the kind of way we were able to assess people's reactions, for better or for worse, it suddenly felt like it was going to, you know, it was potentially, if Arsenal didn't respond well, which was highly possible, that the whole kind of restart period might have been a real drag. So the manner in which Arteta and the players turned it around quite radically, I think, has been splendid. So much credit in the bank, extra credit. I think Arteta and the way the players have responded to what he's trying to do, they'd already built up quite a lot of credit in the bank pre the pause of football. But the specific response to the specific set of circumstances after Brighton, it's almost like an extra booster, I think, to that credit that they're building up, because it's so easy to look from the outside in and see what they're trying to do and how it can get results and how there are lots of little things that have improved and ratcheted up, to create a sort of sense where actually it's a team that hopefully is putting in some habits to take into next season. Whatever happens this season, I think that this period is giving us good habits, which are really, really needed, because how many bad habits had the club and the players and the squad slipped into kind of pre-Arteta?
Yeah, I mean, isn't one of those bad habits – simply the away record and the inability to get results away from home. So to go to Brighton, you know, and lose to Brighton, lose to Man City, two away games. But then you've got Southampton, which is a difficult place for Arsenal to go, or has been a difficult place. You got to go to Sheffield United, who have been one of the best teams, you know, outside the top six or inside the top six. You know, they've surprised people with how well they've played and how well they've been organised. Not an easy place to go, as we found out earlier in the season as well. You got to go to Wolves. So to go to those three places and win, you know, is I think is deserves a lot of credit. And also, like you say, it is part of correcting what has been wrong.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I still wonder what kind of Arsenal we're going to be looking at whenever the first game of next season might be. I mean, when you look at the squad as is, it feels entirely unpredictable. I mean, apart from sort of a few positions that you'd probably put your, you know, put your hat on and say, I'm absolutely certain that that player will be there and will be a centre part of what our test is building. There's still a lot around the edges where you could see it going either way for a player. And I mean, just look at Mustafi, for example. I still find I'm kind of in awe of Mustafi. I kind of would love to know more about psychology to understand what he's done. Because from the position that he was in August, where the manager comes out and publicly says, you know, go and find yourself another club. Not even privately, but publicly. I mean, that's quite embarrassing. And to have had a situation where, you know, he's come out subsequently and explained how difficult it was personally when you're going through bad period on the pitch and social media and how people react to you and how you make a mistake. And I think the bit that really struck me was him saying that when he made a mistake, it would be the worst feeling is feeling of letting your teammates down. I just thought, oh dear, that's quite rough. That's quite deep. Because these are people you work with every day. It's just, you know, the crowd, you can probably, even though it's hard, sort of compartmentalize into a mass over there. But actually going off the pitch, if you've made a mistake and that's cost the game, and then your teammates come in and you look at each other, it's, you know, and even just looking at yourself in the mirror. I mean, all players, I think, go through this to a degree, even if you're completely brilliant. But, you know, you're going to sometimes have something that doesn't go for you. But and he's, I couldn't have imagined a situation where, you know, there's a few games of the season to go and it's like there's so much confidence in Mustafi at the moment. All right, you can maybe argue that, you know, he made the mistake that assisted the Vardy equaliser the other day. But I certainly wouldn't put the, you know, not getting the points on his shoulders for that game. No. And he's been very, very error-free compared to previously in general in the last few weeks and months. And something of a leader, and playing with a kind of relaxedness, which isn't a very good word, a confidence and a security that I'm not sure I've ever seen from him in an Arsenal shirt before. How much you credit Arteta, how much you credit him, how much that's down to what circumstances, I don't know. But I do admire their capacity to have come back from where he was and kind of create a new look, Mustafi.
Can we sort of tie that in then to, you know, you talk about what the squad is going to look like on the first day of the new season, whenever that's going to be. And Arteta probably has a vision in his mind or you know, a recipe, if you like, for what he wants from his team. But the ingredients aren't necessarily all there. We know when a new manager comes in, it takes him a while to put in place the you know, the components that he wants. You think of Guardiola and the fullbacks at Man City. When he went in there, you know, the first thing he did after his first season was completely replenish the fullback positions to play the way he wanted to. So, you know, it's not unreasonable to think that Arteta
and the goalkeeper.
Yeah, of course. We'll talk about goalkeeper now in a second. But Arteta, it's not unreasonable to think he's got something similar in his mind about what his vision for his team is and the way he wants them to play and the kind of players that he wants. But now he's got to make do with the ingredients that he has. He has to serve up a palatable dish and get results and satisfy people with, you know, an imperfect mix of ingredients, if you like. So, you know, putting the back three in place, for example, is a way of offsetting some of the defensive weaknesses that they have as individuals, but it's working for the team. So I think if we're looking at, you know, Mustafi's redemption, Louise to an extent, you could go back and include Granit Xhaka in this as well when you think about where he was when Mikel Arteta took over, which was, you know, a foot out the exit door, maybe, you know, a foot and half a leg as well, depending on some of the reports. Like, what he's doing with this group of players who have had issues and maybe were slightly traumatized by what had come before, I know we can look back on those first two games after restart and be, you know, unhappy to a certain extent, but since then, I think the response has been really, really positive.
It has, and I just was thinking when you were saying that, I wonder how it would be in the stadium with fans in, because they're doing this kind of on their own, if you like, or in a, you know, in a more intimate group. You know, it's the coaching staff and the players and each other and what they've got going. So if, you know, when they're celebrating moments or they're getting results, it's a thing that you're doing with the guys that you're working with day in, day out. Now, I wonder how it would be if there was a crowd to acknowledge them as well and recognize, you know, obviously the crowd reacts when things don't go well.
Yeah.
But it would be quite nice for those players who have had this redemption arc to have that kind of crescendo of goodness from a greater number of people, which they've been kind of unable to have, which is a shame in a way. You'd like to think that there would be lots of good moments, kind of communal moments that can build something, that connection that you need. I think if you're going to be successful, you need to have a connection between the crowd and the team that is quite solid. It's quite difficult to do that without that. Even looking at someone like Bukayo Saka, for example, and to think that he's not been able to be lauded in the same way by a big crowd for the kind of signing of his contract and all the great things he's doing. I mean, has he got a song yet? Did he have a song pre-lockdown?
I don't really think so.
Remember one? And you're like, come on, this guy needs a song. But it's not really a capacity to get a virtual song down and recorded and sent through the pipes or whatever. But
yeah, we can live without that part of it. But yeah, I mean,
it's all these little bits. It's just interesting they're experiencing this revival just by themselves.
Yeah, and what strikes me when you say that is that what's happening is predicated on what Arteta is demanding of them, right? So when you hear Arteta talk about what he wants from his team and, you know, the buzzwords that we all got used to with Arsene Wenger, Mikel is creating some of his own with his non-negotiables and things like that. But it's clear that there is a demand for the players to work and to work hard. And I think when you talk to football fans, you know, they will forgive a player who perhaps isn't the most skilled player in the world, but who gives 100% on the pitch, right? That's something that fans can really get behind and identify with and connect with. And it seems to me that, you know, when Arteta is talking about the people who are willing, they can get on the boat and they can come with him and all this kind of stuff, that is something that would really resonate if there were fans in the stadium, if there was a crowd there. Because what Arteta is saying is, work hard, come with me on this journey, and we will achieve things. And now we're seeing them working hard, and they're getting results, and they're playing well, as we saw in the first half against Leicester on Tuesday night. It didn't end as well as we would have liked, and you could point to the finishing and what have you as being a bit of a problem. But in terms of some of the football that we played, you know, that is definitely something that fans in the stadium would react to in a very positive way.
Yeah, and actually, it's the oddest thing being at the game on whatever night it was
Tuesday.
Against Leicester. What day is it?
Tuesday. What it's Thursday now.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, but and I almost embarrassed to talk about being there because I'm aware of quite how privileged a position we're in to be inside the stadium. But it was, you know what's really weird about it? There's two things. In the first half, when Arsenal sort of suddenly kind of found sort of fourth gear, you know, after the opening goal and creating some really good chances and should have got the second, and a lot of players were playing well and there was good combinations all over the pitch, and it was quite exciting. And I found myself, and I didn't know that you could do this in an empty stadium, but kind of getting that adrenaline and getting a bit carried away, just like a loser on my own, you know, but you could feel something happening. And it was interesting, like, having this vibe of, like, actually Arsenal really playing good football and really dominating against a very good opponent, you know. And there have been some accusations of at times that, you know, Arteta's obviously made, like, you know, some really good progress, but possession-wise, Arsenal haven't necessarily been amazing, or some of the football hasn't been, you know, sort of first class in that classic way that you sacrifice something offensively when you're trying to tidy up the you know, the back end of the pitch and the team first of all. But there was this sort of 20-minute period where it was like, you know, this is good Arsenal. You know, this is the good Arsenal DNA that people like to float around as the type of football they believe should be what Arsenal are representing. And the other bit that was interesting later on is in that last kind of 10 minutes or so when Nketiah had been sent off. Again, there's no one in the stadium. There's no home fans or away fans. It's just people working and watching. And like the tension, I'm like, how can I be feeling this tension? Like, you know, when you're in a stadium and like the tension is so palpable because it's like it's tension multiplied by 50,000, 60,000. And it was odd because I still felt it. And I did think to myself, God, this would have been like really, really tense if it had been the crowd there. I just hope we can get everyone back soon, or even some people back soon.
Yeah. Can we talk about, again, when we speak about Arteta and what he says and the way that he sets out his vision for people and, you know, the idea that when he came in, he said, everybody gets a clean slate under me, and Xhaka has responded to that. Mustafi has responded to that. Dani Ceballos, a player who looked like maybe a little bit lightweight, maybe didn't really look like the kind of player we thought we were getting, had some issues with Arteta, and he sort of put it up to him and challenged him. And he said about Ceballos, he's trained like an animal and he's in the team now and he's playing really, really well. That is there something, that connection that you need as a coach or as a manager to get the best out of players, they need to feel like, I don't know whether it's a sense of fairness or a sense of justice, or that there is this opportunity for them. It's not just a manager saying something in public and doing something differently. You know, he has said things to players and some of them publicly, you know, you've got to do this, and if you do this, you will be considered. And they've done that. They have been considered. Does that create, do you think, a kind of environment, training ground environment, match day environment, squad environment, that players respond to in a positive way?
It's good, isn't it? I think that what's clever about it is not only is Arteta sending out signals to Ceballos in this case, but he's also sending out signals to the whole squad by extension. Because every player who goes up to train every day and is in every team talk understands what's going on in the same way. And you can extrapolate from what's happened to Ceballos and put it towards everybody, which is, you know, I'm not going to give people favors. I'm not going to indulge people. And we all know who we're talking about here. I am going to be fair, and you show me that I can't leave you out, or that you've got to be on the bench or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, he's not picking Saka every week for a laugh. He deserves to be in the team.
Yeah.
And at the moment, he's not picking Ceballos. You know, if anything, if you've got a lone player who's got, you know, a handful of games to go, unless you're in the position where you desperately want to buy them, they desperately want to come, and, you know, you think it'll really help to convince terms of contracts. And, you know, if Arsenal decide to keep Ceballos, they've got to factor in the money that is going to be required to buy him full time, presumably from Real Madrid, unless they organise a kind of, you know, another year of loan, which sometimes happens, but you know, I kind of think once you've had someone for a year, especially if they're of the kind of age that Ceballos is, either you want them or you don't, unless they're so outstanding that that's the only way you can keep them at your club. And you know that they're going to go back to Real Madrid and be a star there for the next 10 years. But that's not really Ceballos' case. But, I think it's understandable if you think, well, I'm going to play someone who's going to be here next season. But he's playing the guy who he feels is going to get him the best performances at the moment. And Ceballos has responded brilliantly. I think the way he's played in the last few weeks, did you see that coming? Not sure.
No.
I'm not sure we ever saw quite that level of performance.
No.
He was always a bit of a flashes player. And then you think, well, where is he and what's he doing?
Yeah. I have to say, I've been really impressed.
He seems much more disciplined.
Yeah.
He's still got a good energy about him, but it seems to have much more of a sense of team purpose rather than I'm just going to bandy about all over the pitch and, you know, do my bits and pieces.
I mean, I have to say, I've been extremely impressed, not only with the level of his performance, but his commitment and his willingness to do that kind of a work. Because as you say, he's a Real Madrid player. He doesn't know. Maybe he does at this point. Maybe there is something worked out, but we're not sure about it. But, you know, he doesn't know if he's going to be playing for Arsenal next season or where, indeed, he's going to be playing next season at all.
He might be playing for neither Arsenal nor Real Madrid.
Of course, and maybe there's an element of, you know, this is a guy putting himself in the shop window to an extent, which we've seen in the past with certain players. Nevertheless, you can't argue with the way that he's worked and the way that he has performed on and off the pitch and has responded positively to what Arteta has asked of him. Conversely, we have an issue with Matteo Guendouzi. Some details came out via France Football this week about the row that supposedly happened where Arsenal were unhappy with him goading Brighton players about the money that he was earning. And he says he was only sticking up for Bernd Leno and, you know, they wanted him to apologise. He's refused to apologise, et cetera, et cetera. How do you view that situation in the current context of this season where a player, by his own unwillingness to apologise, to do what is expected of him by the manager who is trying to instill discipline across his squad, is basically making himself unavailable for selection when we need as many fit players and healthy players as we can get?
It doesn't look great from his long-term future point of view at Arsenal. But I think when you consider how Arteta has projected what he wants, you just said it yourself, when we really get the feeling that Arteta is being very fair, is giving people that, you know, that chance. Get on the boat or don't, but everybody's welcome to come and get on the boat at this moment in time. So it feels, sometimes with a row, you know, there can be two sides to the story and this and that, but it does feel a little bit weighted, like somehow Guendouzi has taken a position. And, I'm all for players having personality, having strong opinions and, you know, being passionate about what they believe. And I think if you too much try and smother those things, it doesn't always work. And you just only have to think of the likes of Ian Wright and Robin van Persie and Charlie George. Depends how far back you want to go, but the club has had a history of some great players who have been maverick characters with a bit of unpredictable. And sometimes coaches have to take a view with those types of players that you have to give them a bit more rope. They're going to need a slightly different kind of emotional environment to maybe the one that you would give everybody else, but it's worth it. George Graham sort of, I think, almost famously just kind of almost let Ian Wright do what he likes and didn't try and overcoach him because he was such an off-the-cuff player that he recognised that it was going to be counterproductive. Didn't try and make him be too, much of a stickler for the way he behaved because he knew that Wrighty almost needed to G himself up and be a bit wild and expressive. And that was him. And if you take that away, then you take away some of the player. But Arteta has already in a short space of time earned that trust that I think we have to back his judgment, even if you think, well, maybe should he be giving Guendouzi another chance? Or I kind of feel like he knows what he's doing. If he's made a judgment call on this kid's attitude, I think he's earned the right for, you know, you have to let Arteta do his thing, and they will solve it within the club and its hierarchy in the best way they possibly can. If that means trying to rake in as much money as they can for a young player with potential who someone else thinks they can handle the temperament with, that's what might happen. If this is part of a greater punishment that he might learn a serious lesson from and come back from, if the door is still open, then he'll have learnt in the best way possible.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth pointing out that disciplinary measures aren't necessarily just punishment. You know, there are, you know, particularly with young players, it's a way of helping them develop and correct their course and to learn and to improve them as players and as people, which I think is a sort of more holistic view of what football managers and football coaches do. But, you know, it's not just punishment for punishment's sake. And I know the point you make about the previous characters that we have had at the club. I'm not sure we've really seen enough from Matteo Guendouzi on the pitch to indulge that kind of behaviour just yet. So we'll wait and see what happens and see what way Mikel Arteta deals with this. You can never say never. We've used Granit Xhaka as a great example of that. And football can surprise you in terms of how quickly things turn around, and opportunities can come as well via injuries, via suspensions, where really a manager has no choice but to turn to a player he might not necessarily want, and from there you could get some kind of reconciliation. But look, let's see. I want to talk to you about Emi Martinez, and it's amazing to think that he is, I don't know if he is the longest serving player at the club right now.
He is.
You know, 10 years he's been at Arsenal. We've seen him in flashes. He's had some loan spells, which you expect for a young goalkeeper to go out and get playing time. A lot of those loan spells didn't go particularly well until the one he had last season at Reading, where he played with a fair amount of frequency and really enjoyed it. Have you been surprised at the level of performance that we've got from him, considering he is now, is he 26 or is he 27? I can't remember exactly how old he is. I should Google this. You know, and you know, for a guy of that age, he's 27, so I think he's the same age as Bernd Leno. And Bernd Leno has played hundreds and hundreds of first-team games in his career, and Emi Martinez, you know, is just above 50, thereabouts. There's a sort of short-termism to a lot of analysis these days, and he's only played 5 or 6 games, whatever it might be. But there's already people talking about, well, actually, you know, maybe Emi Martinez could be the number one. Maybe we could cash in on Bernd Leno, et cetera, which I know is premature. But that's sort of representative of the way he's played.
Honestly, when you asked before, are you surprised? I'd say the answer to that is yes, a little bit. And I kind of base that slightly on just general chats with people who know a lot more than me about the players that are coming through, either youth or reserve level. And I would say that the view from most people about Emi was, you know, lovely guy, absolutely, people think the world of him, top human being, but maybe not quite good enough, seemed to be the gist of kind of how he was generally perceived. And maybe that was reflected in, as you say, the length of time that he's been around and gone on loan and not really staked a serious claim. And I'm fascinated in a way by how he's come in and sort of taken this opportunity, because I think there was, he seems to have this this lovely confidence, which is a great thing to have as a goalkeeper. But in a way, you need to see if he can sustain that after a problem or a mistake. Because what he's not really had yet is a really bad moment. And again, whether crowds and scrutiny and that kind of stuff is a factor or not, nobody can tell. But I would be loath to make a serious judgment based on, you know, to say he should be number one, or, you know, go and sell Bernd Leno, or go to some extreme reaction based on what is still a handful of games in the first team. Admittedly, he's performed, you know, outstandingly well. I think he has a great presence. He's quick around his box. He's making good decisions when to come and when not to come. His handling looks very secure. He holds onto the ball, you know, like, I loved how he went and ran out at Adama Traore. I know that that wasn't, you know, technically a save, but he put him off. And, it, you know, that takes a bit of balls, really, to run a guy like that. I think even if you're the size of Emi Martinez. But it's been a great period for him. But again, being a boring old historian, I would maybe go back to Alex Manninger in 1998, who came into the team. And that was a team that won the double, so there was pressure on to win stuff. It's a slightly different situation to where Arsenal are right now. But he had to come in for David Seaman. He was a young goalkeeper with a, you know, a lot of promise. And he played out of his skin for those 6 or 8 games that he came in. He was absolutely tremendous.
Yeah, I remember
him having a particularly good game against West Ham in the FA Cup. And against Man United at Old Trafford, which was a famous victory that went a long way towards making sure that title went to Highbury and not to Old Trafford. And he didn't quite become the, you know, the great goalie that it looked like he might be in those cameo appearances. So I, without wanting to sound like a bit of a kind of sit on the fence bore, I would just urge a little bit of caution, say enjoy what Emi is doing. It's great. Everybody's delighted for him. And if he carries on in this vein, he does present a serious question as to who should be number one. And let's deal with that question when the time comes. But I just am so glad that after what looked like such a horrific injury to Bernd Leno, first of all, it was not as bad as all that. And he's up and about. And you know, by all accounts, there's no real reason why he shouldn't be fit for the start of next season. I'd love that competition. I think that can only bring out the best in both of them. Probably Bernd Leno didn't really feel that his place was under threat before. Maybe it's going to make him push himself a little bit harder. Who knows? And that's not a bad thing either for both of them.
No, definitely not. Can I just ask you about squad building again very quickly before we move on? Just look ahead quickly to the North London Derby. And just some of the comments that Mikel Arteta has been making about the need to improve the squad. He's obviously talking in a very positive way about his players right now, but he's made it abundantly clear that for Arsenal to get back to where we supposedly or reportedly want to be in terms of the overall ambitions of the club, squad improvement is absolutely vital. And has not been, well, sort of skirted around the edges of kind of putting pressure on those on high at executive level to make it happen. And it strikes me that he will have a very clear idea of what kind of players he wants and what kind of players that he needs to play the kind of football that he wants, etc., etc. Have you been encouraged by how forthright he's been when it comes to that side of what needs to be done at the club? Because, you know, if we go back to last summer and we think about what happened in the transfer market, Unai Emery wanted Wilfried Zaha, who is a right-footed player with Premier League experience who plays on the left. He really, really wanted him. So Arsenal went out and bought Nicolas Pepe, who's a left-footed player who plays on the right, who's got no Premier League experience. It didn't really speak.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
A question? Who do you think was right? Just because Unai Emery wanted one thing and he got something else, does that mean that Unai Emery was right in wanting Zaha over Pepe?
I don't.
Or do you think that the football executive committee were right to overrule his preferred player and choose the one that they chose?
If you were asking me which player I would choose, I would have chosen Pepe over Zaha.
So on the one hand, you're saying what you want, and there's a little bit of this about perceptions and how, as fans or people outside the inner circle, we are judging the people making the decisions. And when it's Emery, I think it's because in the end he didn't have the best time. You can probably turn around and say, you know, I'm quite glad that the football executive got what they wanted and not what he wanted. But when it's Arteta, and at the moment Arteta has tremendous goodwill and backing of everybody.
Sure.
And looks like he's making a lot of good calls. You want them to say, okay, well, actually, can we maybe go with Arteta's choice? Because, you know, maybe when you guys chose player X or player Y, I'm quite carefully not naming names here, you know, people might have preferred somebody else. So I think in the end, the key thing is this. Somewhere there has to be that relationship between what the manager or coach identifies as his preferences and what the football executive might be leaning towards. And I'd be absolutely fascinated if there's a difference of opinion.
Sure.
To see if the sway or the whatever is any different to how it was previously.
Yeah. I mean, my point was just about sort of a cohesive strategy between absolutely. The manager and the executive team. Like Emery wanted one thing and they went out and bought something completely different, yet continued to back Emery vehemently, even when things were going badly, despite the fact that they, in some way, have a responsibility to not giving him the tools that he wanted to do the job to the best of his ability, if that makes sense.
I think ultimately the football executive, unless you're in a very specific situation, like, say, your manager is Jurgen Klopp, and, you know, I don't know what the deal is there in terms of whether things have come in on his say or their purchasing team's say or a combination of the two. But there is a danger on the one hand of if you only get the player that manager wants, because that manager might not be around for very long. You have to get the right player for the club. You have to.
Sure.
Now, if the coach is someone that you rate their opinion in a massive way and you're really hopeful they're going to be around for ideally a bit longer than, you know, 18 months or, you know, 1 to 2 years, whatever the average is these days for turnover of managers, then great. You try your best to work together and try your best to deliver what he wants. But I don't think it's rocket science to an extent what he's likely to want. And I don't know how able the football executive committee are going to be to deliver all the things that really is needed. There's a lot needed. And I think everybody knows that there are upgrades in most departments that would be welcome. It's not easy to get them all the time. But if you look at the spine of the team, okay, we just talked about the goalkeeping situation slightly, but at centre-back, William Saliba is coming in and everybody's dead excited and that's brilliant. And hopefully that turns out to be one of the great deals of all time. But he's still a teenager who hasn't played in the Premier League and probably needs, you know, somebody amazing next to him to really ease his transition and help him to develop into the player everyone hopes he's going to be. Is that player at the club?
No.
I'm not sure.
No, I don't think
so. Not really. So if we're talking dreamland, you'd probably be getting an outstanding leader, but also brilliant player who doesn't make mistakes, really dominant centre-back to play next to Saliba, and then maybe the rest of them fight it out to be kind of picks 3 and 4, possibly 5, who are going to get plenty of game time anyway, because that's the nature of football.
Yeah.
If you look at the central midfield, is the guy or guys there that you really, really, really want to be your midfield pivots?
No.
Right. So
not in my opinion, anyway.
Ideally, you're bringing in one or possibly two, making some changes there. And obviously some also stick around who have been doing really, really well and will be part of the squad and playing plenty. Centre-forward. Fascinating area for me, this. Is the centre-forward there to play the Arteta system that you really, really, really want?
Is there a world-class centre-forward at the club? Absolutely, there is. 100%. But, you know,
Is playing the centre-forward role as Arteta sees it his best position? Because I looked at the work that Lacazette was demand was expected to do, because Mikel Arteta just yelled at him for kind of pretty much.
I heard that. We could hear that in the television. Laka, Laka.
I mean, Laka, Laka, Ale, Laka. I mean, and it, I didn't think it was a kind of ticking off sort of shouting. It was an encouraging shouting, as that has came across to me anyway. But I think there was this sense almost from Arteta that, like, that guy has to do that job flawlessly, or like as good as damn it what he wants, like be in that right position to make sure that three big bloody annoying centre backs to play against are troubled and are not sitting there having a kind of, you know, they've got to be aggravated pretty and on that, you know, put on their toes like all the time. That's a real, it's a bit of a thankless task, and if you're asking someone to do that, and Laka does it quite well, albeit with lots of shouting, that makes it maybe more difficult for him to be a predator at the same time.
Mm.
So his goal scoring stats are not amazing at the moment. If you put Aubameyang in that position, you might get more goals, but is he going to do that kind of like relentless bastard press?
The bastard press, I like.
You know,
I
know. For, you know, be in charge of that. You're the man. Yeah, it's your job. You've got to be leading the way. You're just going to be help, hopefully, from the guys on either side of you and the guys in midfield, and you're not the only one, but you're sort of setting the tone. And is that going to bring the best out of Ober? So it's quite a specialised role. And if you really want someone to do that really well with amazing energy and be so annoying for defenders and score loads of goals, does Arsenal have that player at the moment?
Maybe not. Maybe I don't.
So it's interesting. Yeah. It's just all food for thought. In that, I kind of imagine that Arteta probably has people in mind that he would love in those three spinal positions.
Yeah.
Again, with the caveat, it's a squad game, and you know, you can make a case for lots of people staying and still being really important around that.
Sure, sure. I mean, it is one of those
compromising slightly. So,
I mean, okay, just sort of going backwards slightly on that then, you know, to the initial question about recruitment and about what the manager wants. I think Edu, who we haven't heard a great deal from, when the contract renewals were announced, where they extended David Luiz, where they brought in Cedric Suarez and Pablo Mari officially on a permanent basis, he spoke about sitting down with Mikel Arteta and having a plan about the kind of squad that they wanted to build. So how do we talk about what
reconcile.
The club wants? Yeah, how do we reconcile that thing, you know, with what the club wants? How involved does the manager get in, you know, like Edu is the technical director, ostensibly, you know, he sets the tone for the kind of football that Arsenal want to play, whether it's Mikel Arteta in charge or somebody else. You know, is that not basically his job? But of course, Arteta is hugely involved in setting out this plan, because I think the way he wants to play is probably very different from the way Unai Emery wants to play. Whether we're going to get some kind of Wenger, Guardiola, Barcelona hybrid mix of whatever he's got going on in his head, I don't know.
That sounds good.
It doesn't sound bad to me at all either, to be honest. But it's just about implementing that. And is that then going to be the blueprint for Arsenal, you know, if Arteta is not in charge somewhere down the line? So it's trying to find this balance between, you know, what is it that the club wants to be, and how much of what the club wants to be is being informed by what the manager wants the club to be? These are very difficult questions.
I think there's a certain idea of what the club wants to be, but it has to be a flexible one. You cannot be a completely blinkered. I mean, if you're Man City now, for example, or there are certain clubs that are so much a reflection of their coach and that coach's philosophy. Klopp, also with Liverpool, they've become very wedded to one another. And that was the case, obviously, for a long time with Arsenal and Arsene Wenger. I think there are certain things you can have. It's a kind of a generalistic view of what you want your club to be and how you want your players to play and look.
Mm.
But you have to have a bit of looseness there too. You have to have a bit of freestyle around that to fit around certain managers' our coaches' ideas as well. I think the whole thing is about compromise. From Arteta's point of view, he's probably never going to get, unless things work out in a way that we don't really expect, his dream squad that maybe Klopp has or maybe Guardiola has, because he doesn't work for one of those clubs that are going to say, you know, here's as much money as you want virtually to get the top guys that you want in certain specific positions. They're going to make all the difference. You know, here's gazillions to get Alisson and Van Dijk because it's going to transform Liverpool's defence.
Yeah.
Let's just do it. That's probably not where Arsenal are at the moment. So he has to compromise a little bit there. And maybe Arsenal will have to make some compromises along the way if Eddie does have a master plan of what he thinks Arsenal should be, in terms of it might be a bit different with a Wenger, with an Emery, with an Arteta. Like, everybody's got to cross their fingers and toes that Arteta is the kind of guy who's good enough and who's got the intentions to be somewhere long enough to do what, I guess, what people call a real project, rather than be a kind of be your coach for a bit and then go on to the next thing. If he can see in Arsenal and they can, and he trusts them enough to back him to do the best that he can in the same way that, or similar way that Klopp was backed at Liverpool, to improve over a period of years. If we think Arteta could be in it for the long game for a kind of 5, 6, 7 years, then that backing's got to be there for him, really. But if it's going to be a shorter situation, which is more common in football, then there has to be that compromise and flexibility from board level too, in terms of who they're buying. They can't only buy very specific Arteta players, if that makes sense, unless they want to get them anyway.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, I think it's... I'm encouraged by how demanding he is, not just of the players.
Me too. Absolutely. But, I mean, I kind of feel... And, you know, when they talk... Sorry to interrupt you, but...
It's okay.
When there were discussions from Arteta's part about how you know, these are the guy, you know, I've got clear ideas about the specificity, I can't say that word, of the players that he wants to come in. You know, he made that really clear. And Eddie, when he spoke recently, discussed how well he got on with Arteta and they got this shared kind of vision and they liked talking to each other about football, and he made it sound like there was a big synergy there. You know, maybe that there are certain things that had to happen to enable other things. So, for example, if you had the question mark as to whether re-signing David Luiz was the best use of Arsenal's money, for example, rather than maybe others, or, you know, if there are certain players where you maybe go, do Arsenal desperately need, you know, is, for example, Cedric Suarez the best thing that they could do for that position for the next 4 years or whatever? If you want to ask yourself those questions about, it might be, I'm totally speculating here, that there's a bit of give and take going on. So it's like, we're going to do these ones because they're here and they're easy and we can do them. And we believe in them, you know, but we're also going to get you X and Y and Z. So you can't, Arsenal are not in a position to get, you know, the best guys in every position right now.
Of course, yeah.
Because there's too much competition. There's not enough brilliant players. And Arsenal have to be creative and lucky and smart and do a mixture of things. So Saka is a godsend because look at what's turned up on our doorstep. And, you know, someone like Guendouzi, if he does go and he generates some money, but he was bought in at a very low price. And actually, it might turn out to be a stupendous deal if they get good cash from him from someone else and then reinvest that into somebody that they might not have been able to afford. Martinelli is another one that just looks like a diamond that's just come out of nowhere. But you've got to have some people in your squad that are, you know, how to put this the nicest way, and Nacho Monreal,
dependable, you know, consistent,
a really dependable guy who might not be the world's best, but he's going to be good around the place. He's going to do a job for you when you need him, and not make a stink. Be a solid, fantastic pro, and it all works. And he's not going to cost the earth. So it might be that there's things like that going on in one, on the one hand, because that enables them to act in a different way, on the other hand, to be more ambitious where it's really needed to try and get those transformative players.
Okay, just very finally, you know, I suppose we could speculate all day about what kind of front three Mikel Arteta will pick for the North London Derby, with Eddie Nketiah probably suspended. We're waiting on an appeal to be decided upon. I don't think there's a chance he's going to get off on that, to be honest, but you never know. But we do have the ability to mix things around a little bit. Arteta didn't necessarily sound like he was too keen to move Aubameyang from that left-hand side. So chances are he could use Lacazette there again. Aubameyang, Nicolas Pepe could come back in. You know, he's got plenty of options for him there. But just the game itself, overall, Arteta understands derbies. He understands the North London Derby. He played in many of them as an Arsenal player and as an Arsenal captain. This is his first one as Arsenal manager. He will be absolutely desperate to get a good result here.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, if you think of the progress that's been made since Brighton, as we said, if Arsenal can get the points from this big game on the weekend, I think that just shows a huge upward trend, and it's brilliant to go in there on the back of some away wins as well at places that have proved difficult. Obviously, yeah, there's a specialist element to this. I think probably the biggest factor is that it doesn't take a genius to imagine that Tottenham's manager will send them out to be smothering and negative, maybe make it more difficult and not necessarily come out on the offensive and, you know, and the way that some other teams would do when they're at home.
Yeah.
Or previous Tottenham teams would have done against Arsenal. I think he'll be looking to, you know, to make it a slugfest, really. So it's going to be interesting to see if Arteta can get Arsenal to impose their game on that situation.
Mm.
But, you know, I agree with you. The fact that he knows what it's all about is handy. I think Freddie Ljungberg can have a few choice words.
For sure.
He very much knows what it's all about. You know, even the likes of Bukayo Saka understands. He's played in derbies all his life. He knows.
Yeah,
But it's a massive game, I think, now, because I still think Europa League is, as a minimum sort of European aim, is going to be helpful. And
yeah, he's clear about that, isn't he? That he wants European football.
You know, the higher up you finish in the league, there's a financial imperative there. You get better money out of that. It's just, you know, everything, all the building blocks that are going towards having a kind of proper go at something next season. A lot, in a way, when you think back to the nightmare of Baku, sorry to bring that up again, but it felt like so much hinged on that to do with the next season, wasn't it? It was like,
yeah,
if you win and you get back in the Champions League and you get all that extra money and status, and then you can do this in the transfer market, and then there seemed like this whole domino effect about that was as much to do with following season and relaunching a club as it was to do with actually winning a piece of silverware.
Mm.
And I think this situation is related in that the higher up the table Arsenal can finish, and the, you know, the more money they can generate in doing so, and getting back into Europe as well in any capacity, has that slight knock-on effect of helping the club, I think, try to move forward more efficiently and with a bit more courage.
Well, you know, moving forward off the back of a win over Spurs is always something we can get behind. So we'll keep fingers crossed for that. Amy, a pleasure as always. Thank you very much.
Cheers, Andrew. All the best.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Thank you, as always, to Amy Lawrence. You can find her on Twitter at AmyLawrence71, at AmyLawrence71. She writes for The Athletic, and you can hear her on the Handbrake Off podcast via The Athletic as well. So check that out if you're looking for more Arsenal stuff to listen to. Right, normally we would do a little bit of team news here ahead of the derby, but there isn't really any yet. It hasn't dropped, so we're assuming everybody who is fit remains fit. Those who are available remain available. Those players who weren't necessarily available for the last few games for whatever reason, whether it was indiscipline, whether it was a back injury, are not going to be with us for the North London Derby on Sunday. It feels almost redundant talking about the game itself in terms of what we expect or what we want. Everyone listening to this, all of you, you know what's a good result for Arsenal. You're all keeping fingers crossed for that. So let's hope some of the form and some of the stuff that we've shown over the last few games can be continued in this game, that we can take more of the chances that we create, continue some defensive stability. And hopefully, when we look back on the game on Monday morning, we are having a very, very goodly morning on the Arscast Extra. Please join us for that. If you want to give us a rating review on Apple Podcasts, that would be swell. Don't feel obliged, just if you want to. And you can join our Patreon as well, patreon.com/arsblog. Have yourselves a great weekend. Until the next one, take it easy. Cheers. Bye-bye. The centre circle looks to spread it wide. Oh, it's a free kick there for Leicester City. Looks like quite a bad foul there by the Arsenal player. Just seeing some replays here. He could get a yellow card. Actually, it looks like he didn't touch him at all. It's a dive. Yeah, we can see here he's quite clearly dived, but the referee has taken out the yellow card, and it is a booking for the Arsenal man. Just getting word here, there's going to be a VAR check on this. VAR having a look. Yep. Seeing the replays here from a number of angles, of course. More replays here. We're seeing just a few more replays here. As good a time as any to get some input here from our friend Steve McManaman. Steve, what are your thoughts?
As always, a very good point there, Steve.
4 minutes later.
Referee now is going over to have a look at the pitch side monitor, and he's looking. Yeah, still looking. Looking at the replays. Replay. And from that angle, you can clearly see that the Arsenal player didn't touch him at all. Referee has made his decision. He's coming. It's a red card. It's a red card for the Arsenal man. Steve? As you can imagine, Mikel Arteta is very unhappy there on the sideline, but play is back underway. Leicester move the ball down the left-hand side. Comes to Jamie Vardy. Vardy facing up against Mustafi. Vardy here with the hammer and crucifix. He has literally crucified Shkodran Mustafi, getting the old spear straight into the side there. Look, you can see Mustafi's intestines spilling down onto the pristine turf here at the Emirates, the ground staff. Oh, they do an amazing job. They really do. The life is fading from Mustafi's eyes there, you can see. He's about to pass into the next world. Jamie Vardy takes the ball into the box. Shoots. It's a goal for Leicester City. 1-0. As Mustafi feels the sweet, sweet release of death, Jamie Vardy adds to his Premier League goals tally. Will there be a VAR check? Will there bollocks?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.